きげんよう。
ブーイングの嵐の中、通り過ぎた空気の中、どっからともなく現れるヒーロー、ヘロー、スーパーヒーロー。
バヒーロー、バヒーロー、バッバッバッバッバヒーロー、バヒーロー、バヒーロー、バヒーロー、バヒーロー、バッバッバッバッバヒーロー、バヒーロー、バヒーロー。ブーイングの嵐の中。
Sorry, just
Hulk Hogan method of promotion now is we have to be on all the time.
Yeah, you have to be on all the time. If press record, there's no we've missed. Oh, sweet Jesus. The thing I was going to say that now all the people will know, and I'm going to give away your secret, Justin, is that on Skype, as I was just explaining to Amo before Justin answered the phone, you can have like your little blurb under your name. For example, Mark Robinson, Lithium Project on the board. His is, yeah, fuck yeah, whatever. I guess he thinks that makes him sound cool or something. But, hi Mark. And, but Justin's is, I'm on the phone. Please call when Status is online. Yes, he is online.
Wish I could have warned you before we started, but now, like Humpty Dumpty himself, you're about to have a great fall. That's what yours says too, Alan.
But, no, I'm actually on the phone. Yours was saying that before you're on the phone.
Maybe I was, though. I mean, I wasn't, but...
Justin, I'm not convinced that this is anything other than you having a trying to be witty with your blurb, and you cannot convince me of otherwise.
I use Skype. Once a month for this, so...
What about the Justin Shapiro show, which I believe is an NXT episode?
Someone is doing research for that.
Nice. that's actually made me 10 times more excited for the show, knowing that 3 weeks of research has already gone in.
And I'm ready, but I'm bringing in an expert, and they wanted to... bone up. So whenever they're ready, I guess I should do one in the interim, or else I'll lose my
You'll be back to just being a novelty podcast like Joe versus the World, as opposed to a regular featured podcast.
Well, I never wanted to be regular because that seems so. I don't know how you'd consistently
pass a
going, Ellen. Yeah, it's like what you have to do it and then just. Immediately turn around and do it again in a regular interval of time. So it was always going to be like a sporadic thing, but this NXT thing has fallen behind schedule through no fault of my own. Or some, I guess, I could be. What do you do, Alan, when you can't keep your guests in line?
Crack your whip? I, as I'm currently facing that situation with a young man over in Japan, I have called up Masaki Mochizuki and told him to kick this young man really, really hard and stretch him and slap him and make him do the dishes all day, every day. So that's what I'm currently...
Alan responsible for the death of another young boy.
Did you say white? 'Cause
I said young boy.
Oh, young boy. I just said young white man. It's like, that's not the case here. But anyway.
Alan, what was your Newcastle bet?
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing I was going to be saying off the air to the guys. But we've got on the air now. My gambling problem is spiraling out of control. I'm going to share it with everyone here. It's a big deal. As you guys know, I think we talked about it on the show. I took out some money and then put some bets on WrestleMania. The bets were Kane or Randy Orton to beat Kane and Sheamus to beat Daniel Bryan. One of them worked out for me; the other didn't. I ended up, in the interest of full disclosure, we'll go with specifics here. I deposited €50 into my account to make these bets, and so I ended up with those two results. I lost €21, and I was down to €29. And my goal was to claw myself back up as close to my 50 as possible. Always a wise goal in gambling. Say you're going to quit once you get to a certain point, which I actually would have, but I'm in no danger of getting to that point, as you'll soon hear. It was a 29 euro, and then 2 weeks ago for UFC, I had two bets, two fights, one won, one didn't. I came out with a net profit of 3 euro. So we're up to 32, and fun times were starting. I was chipping away. I was encouraged. I was like, don't need to get this all back in one go. We'll just chip away at it slowly. UFC comes up this weekend, two bets, and it was great because I bet one underdog, I put a small amount on an underdog and a big amount on a favorite. And the underdog, I found out his result last night. It was Michael Johnson against Tony Ferguson. And I bet on Michael Johnson because I think Tony Ferguson is a cunt. And I bet on Michael Johnson, and I was going to bed last night, and I checked the result of that because, like, let's face it, I wasn't going to watch that fight. So I just checked the result, and Michael Johnson won. So I was like, yes, my underdog money came in. Tremendous. I was thinking I was probably going to be back up to around 40, 41 at that point. And I was like, oh, this is great. Get up this morning, I watched the actual main show, and my other bet, which I'd put heavy money on as a favorite, was Pat Barry to beat LeVar Johnson. That didn't work out. And as a result, my net loss on these two fights was 3 euro. So I was back down to where I started. My 3 euro profit from 2 weeks ago was cancelled by a 3 euro loss from today. And then I was going up to my friend's house to watch a Man City Newcastle match. And before leaving, I just finished watching the UFC. And before leaving, I said, I'll look at what bets they have for this match. Maybe I'll throw some money on that. And I saw loads of little bets I liked, and I just started putting on 1 euro, 2 euro, 3 euro, and all these little bets, put on a grand sum total of 11 euro, and I think it was on 11 bets in total, on 8 bets in total, 11 euro, and I lost all 8 bets, lost, and they were quite diverse bets, they weren't dependent all on like one thing, 4 of them were dependent pretty much as I worked out when it happened. I didn't really realize it at the time, but 4 of the bets were dependent on anything but a nil-all score at halftime, and we got a nil-all score at halftime, so half my bets were out the window at halftime, the other half all went out in the second half, and now I'm down to a measly 18 euro, and but my goal is to keep Paddy Power now doing WWE pay-per-views every month, so. Thinking that is going to be my thing that I'm going to chip away with every month, because if there's one thing I know, it's wrestling. And as we all know, this started out so well because of the fact that I know wrestling and on wrestling radio.
If you can't win on Randy Orton versus Kane, I don't think you can win.
You know, they did Extreme Rules odds, and I was so tempted to. The Randy Orton odds are way worse than they were last time. So I was getting way less value for money, but I was so sure. But I was like, if I just put all this money on Randy Orton, he's just going to lose twice to Kane somehow. Like, he's retiring and they want to give him as many wins over as possible. But,
I wrote down a really mean joke that I don't mean. Can I read it?
Sure.
You also gambled that this story would be interesting.
you know, it's a shame because we're like supposed football experts and you kind of have ruined this. But we did call Papi Cisse would become like the big star on the first road to WrestleMania.
Did I call that?
No, I called that, but you sort of agreed.
Okay, I had never heard of the man before, so I had no basis to be agreeing with that.
He like scored the day we did a show, and we were like, this guy's going to be the future. And you were like, yeah. Like,
I vaguely remember that. Yeah. So I was basing it on one game.
Well, so was I.
Fair enough.
All sample size. Alan, wouldn't it be cool if your problem eventually got so bad that you had to like risk other things, like you had to put ownership of this show up in a bet and lost it, like a wrestling angle?
Justin, don't joke about such things. The ownership of this show will never be passed down again. I'm taking it to my goddamn grave.
no, but shouldn't it should cascade like a Russian nesting doll eventually and be like,
what the hell is a Russian nesting doll?
In 2 generations it'll be Amo presents, Alan presents, Dr. Keith presents, after Amo, who inherits it from you, passes it down to his grandchildren.
Amo is
he had with his young wife and his young daughter and her young husband. Not together. That's separate.
That's disgusting.
Guys, we should probably do some kind of an intro for... Perhaps we have a new first-time listener right here, right now.
Oh.
In fact, we probably will, because I'm probably going to make this a free show.
Oh.
Oh dear, I just realized that. I probably shouldn't have done this as the introduction for a free show. But
you
oh well.
Stick this at the end with your awesome voiceover that says, DKP, bonus scenes.
Was that what it was?
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the DKP, Dr. Keith Presents. It's Just Aiming to Please. This one we have Justin and Amo on here. And but this is special, Just Aiming to Please, not just because of the content which we will be talking about, but the reason why we will be talking about it. Because I don't know if you have heard, dear listener, but very unfortunate occurrence happened a couple of weeks ago. One of our most valuable listeners, one of our biggest friends of the show, the man who creates the random goodness videos, Bob Cadmus, S.A. Rios 187, just the random goodness videos. If you've never seen them before, they're an absolute treat. They were going on for a few years. He's an awesome guy, one of my favorite people on the internet, just a delight. And unfortunately, in very sad news, he lost his house through a fire a couple of weeks ago, and pretty much everything, including some pets. I shouldn't say pretty much everything. I think it was absolutely everything but the clothes on their back. It was really horrible. They're working really hard getting back on their feet. And my God, this guy is the most positive. He's like the most positive person I've ever seen. And that's just something coming from me, I'm sure people will say. But he has dealt with this in such a positive fashion. I know I wouldn't be able to even begin to do the same. If it happened to me, I'd probably just crumble up in a curl in a ball and cry. But, yeah, this guy is so positive, really dealt with it really, as well as he could. And, Justin had the great idea that, we would do something on this show. We would do a show pretty much to encourage people to kind of benefit or to give a bit, help out a bit to Bob, get him back on his feet. You can be like money donations, whatever you want. I'll put all the info. But like, if you want to just like send him some wrestling, I think he put out a call and he actually made the post. It was for people to, if they had kept his random goodness videos, to maybe send them on to him or upload them. I'm pretty sure, I know I've sent him a load of that stuff, and I'm sure he's got it from other places too, so I think he's fine for that. But I don't know, if you want to just make up the guy an awesome wrestling DVD and send it his way, I'm sure he'd appreciate that. But
I should say at this point, sorry, Alan, but if you're going to be donating money, Alan will not gamble it away.
I promise that is the truth. It will be going directly to Bob. I will give his info, his PayPal stuff and the stuff they're using for their fundraising efforts. So I will pass that on. I'll post on the board. I'll put a link up in the description of the show. So if you're a freeloader and you're listening, if it's a free show, which I expect it to be, you'll be able to just get it from there. But yeah, Justin had the idea, and just to help the guy out, because he's an awesome dude. He's an awesome, valued listener of the show. And if you've never seen any of his random goodness videos, if you can find any of them online, unfortunately, YouTube, he had to take them all down. But I'm sure they're floating around in other places. And if you can ever see them, they were really, really great. And I always loved watching them. They were always a highlight when they'd surface. But so we're doing this show for Bob. It's a random goodness appreciation show. And what's more random than for us to talk about than a... I suppose it's not really random, because it's the thing we're kind of most known for talking about, and that is shitty WWE movies. And we have a shitty one, but a great one on tap today. And guys...
Our last one was just about 1 year ago, wasn't it?
It was.
Did we do one after Chaperone?
No, do you know, Chaperone was last March, and I think we did that Batista one. I want to say that was around July or August.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
We never got to the serious Chaperone.
The serious Chaperone?
Yeah. The other Triple H movie. That's like real. Real stakes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
With Rappaport and
Oh, yeah. Scene. Oh, yeah, that looks shit. Rappaport's the New York guy, isn't he?
Yes.
I don't like him.
So in that case, he annoyed me in Friends. Forget about it.
Yeah, he annoyed me in Friends when he was dating Phoebe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
For Paul Rudd? Hank Azaria?
Hank Azaria was sound. He was really nice. He was a nice scientist. That's what he was.
He wasn't like those evil scientists.
Right.
That appear.
Hey, they're out there. They're out there. So, we're going to talk about the movie. I have used a lot of my voice in this first 15 minutes. And I know I'm very conscious of the fact that I talk too much on these shows and don't let my guests. But that's a good thing about the WWE movies, because I usually forget them immediately after watching them. And I know Justin and Amo take copious amounts of both mental and physical notes. So I'm going to pretty much pass it over to you guys. And I don't think we've said what movie we're reviewing yet. We've just said it's a WWE movie. So people are saying to themselves, is it the Randy Orton one? Is it that Big Show one? Big Show had one, right? Yeah. But no, it's the Edge one. Bending the rules, and we are nothing if not rule benders, and Amo is nothing if not a bender. So
no, that was my joke from an email thread.
Yes, stole it from your notes. But I'll let the guys kick things off here, and whichever one of you wants to,
Justin.
Justin, you set the scene here. Tell the people what this is all about.
Bending the Rules is a psychological thriller. No, it's funny you said notes, because I think I have the fewest notes I've ever taken for one of these. It's like half a page of just half sentence fragments. Yes, half of a fragment, which is small. What were your general thoughts in the pantheon of these movies and the pantheon of wrestler performances? Because I feel like Edge may have been my favorite of anybody as far as just like showing up in a movie and not looking out of place.
I think he was really good. He just his little facial expressions and like the way he delivered lines and the way he carried himself. Generally, I think he was better than Triple H in The Chaperone. Like, not this.
No.
Definitely better.
There's no one better. Triple H should have gotten an Academy Award for... Oh, no, actually, wait, no. The girl should have gotten an Academy Award for that.
Mm. I do think The Chaperone was a better movie, though. I don't know.
It was a little easier to follow. They both had some convoluted schemes.
Yeah.
Though few as convoluted as this one.
I was really lost in this movie. Like, it was absurd. They kept referencing, like, the characters' names. Don't talk about Johnny. He's a... Fingers is in prison, and we gotta... It's like,
well, Johnny's one thing, but Gil is quite another. Well, actually, they use the name Gil so many times, I didn't figure out who he is.
Yeah, I eventually did, but they were going on and on about Gil, and I was like...
Gil.
Who is Gil?
Who is Gil?
Yeah.
And then, like...
Is Gil Simpsons? Is he? Running a buck?
John Van Riemsdyk, or whoever, is the nefarious, like, death row murderer who we never even see. And those are the names I remember. But I don't know if it's the case for the bottom line of WWE films, although I don't know that there's a magic bullet there that's going to turn anything around. But from a sheer aesthetic standpoint, I really think anything but action movies is the way to go. I want to see wrestlers just interacting in formula films with other people and not just making mean faces and diving out of explosions. That's what I want out of this project. I've been, I think, doing these film reviews for 6 years now, and for sure I lean towards the non-serious.
Yeah, I liked the movie because it was bright.
That was very bright, yeah.
That last, like, I think every scene was, like, bar, like, one was in the daytime. And that last Batista movie, every scene was in the nighttime, so.
Edge was a very bright personality as well, his shirts.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Did he change clothes during the movie?
I don't think
so. He had
so.
A signature look.
It was all pretty much set over, like, a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
If even that long.
Remember when Waylon Smithers went on holiday in The Simpsons and he was like wearing a flowery shirt?
Yeah.
It was like that.
It's a nice shirt. Well, I am.
For me, I'll just one more thing is like in generalities, the appeal of these to me is that it's kind of like going to see your child in a school play, and you just want to see them do well. And it's like it doesn't have to be good; it's just you're going to see them, and it's going to be unusual. So, this one ticked all those boxes.
Were you ever in a school play?
Many.
Yeah. Really?
But only elementary school when like you don't. It's not your choice. They're just like, we're doing a play.
We never had those. We were kind of, we didn't have like plays or anything.
Did you not? We did.
Oh, I didn't. You're like, oh, gay.
that's what I was like in secondary school when I had to do a play. But when I was a kid, it was, we did a good few. And it was like, you know, it's a fun thing to do when you're like seven.
Well, we did like religious kind of plays, like
stuff. Yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah.
So
it
wasn't
a play. It was like in a church.
Oh, we did ours. We did ours in school. Like it'd be for Christmas. Like we'd do like a Christmas thing where I don't know. I can't really remember what my roles would have been. I'm sure they were.
I played a weeping woman for Jesus.
I think I might have been a shepherd.
Huh.
Sounds like you, because you know, in many ways, you are a shepherd of this show. You kind of gather your flock and you preach the good word.
Come over here, Scotty Riggs. Okay, so I want to like.
I'm sorry, I'm just struck now by the weirdness of the fact that we did Macbeth in fourth grade. Why? Who understood that? Neither actors nor audience.
Just as his fourth grade classmates were like, I really find the characters of this quite tasteful.
The complexity of Macduff made some interesting choices.
Disgusting it over a fine glass of red wine.
Yes. I mean, so, like that's what young kids in plays is to begin with. But more than anything, this was memorize these words and stand in a place and say them, have no idea what they mean, they won't even sound real, toil and trouble, double it, that's so unusual. this is like a suppressed memory that has just been unleashed. And then I was the girl who ends up, I think, boning the Nutcracker. I was her brother in the Nutcracker. She hook up with the Nutcracker? I don't know.
She
I hope cracked so.
His nuts.
Yeah. Du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du. So
guys,
yes.
I want to this is something I think we should do at the outset of all these film reviews, because I often find when I listen to them I'm having a hard time keeping up with who's who. So let's do a brief introduction of the various characters in this movie.
Please.
Of course we have Edge starring as
Blades.
Blades, and I thought at the start he was called McBlades. I thought they were like, you're out of control, McBlades. It's like, wow, that's a stretch of a name. Like, I guess I was just hearing things because it turned very quickly into just Blades as the movie went on. But he was your sassy cap that was cop that was
cat cop.
Cat cop. Yeah, he was. There was a cartoon about a cat cop, wasn't there?
Really?
It was a cat dog.
That dog was amazing. And cow and chicken, they were great too. But anyway,
Detective Crocodile.
Ooh, he sounds cool.
It was McGriff, the crime dog.
Investigator. yeah, okay.
We had Edge as the cop. He was suspended for a day or two just because he had been kind of not really going with procedures and stuff like that.
He's a maverick.
Maverick.
In regard to the rules, what would you say he was doing to them?
I would say he was queering them.
Okay. That doesn't make the world work.
I'm trying to think of other characters now. There was, of course, there was the main, the other main character in the movie was Jamie Kennedy. Starring as, I totally forget his name. He was
Theo.
Theo, the the district attorney, the DA,
to the district attorney.
Oh, that's right. He was gunning for the main DA job, but he was the assistant to the district attorney, and he was a real asshole lawyer that was
straight laced motherfucker.
Just so straight laced, and he would not bend the rules. There was no bending, no clearing.
He was straightening the rules out.
He was getting a ruler out, and he was getting a hammer out, and then that's hammering true. Those rules into place to keep them straight.
But, that's the dichotomy, the complexity.
Yes, yes.
If these two characters were to meet, who knows what would happen.
You got them running down parallel tracks.
So tell us about some of the other characters in the movie, Justin.
Well, you, in email, indicated yourself to be a longtime admirer of Jenny Espo. Of Spin City, right? Miss Jennifer Esposito.
Jenny Espo, is that a term that's used for her?
That's my term in the eventual tabloid I will start in the late 90s. And that's the shorthand to refer to her.
Well, here's...
She's photographed with Bradley Cooper.
Here's the deal with me and Jenny Espo, Jespo, as I call her in my tabloid. the thing about her is when she was on Spin City, which is mid to late 90s, I watched that show for a time, and I was a 11-12 year old boy, and I had a thing for the Jespo. I thought Jespo was a fine, fit young lady, and then I never heard or thought about her again for 11 years until this movie. 12 years, 13 years even, maybe, until this movie. And I was like, hey, why don't I recognize the name Jennifer Esposito? I recognize that name. And then I saw her, and I was like, oh, that's your one from Spin City that I had a crush on. And then I was like,
boner.
Where the hell has she... Yeah, but once I got past that, I was like, where the hell has she been for the last, 12 years? So, a big fan of her. She was played her usual sassy Puerto Rican self, and it was a good time.
Humorous anecdote. I was asking myself the same question. So what did I do? Of course, I
IMDb.
I Microsoft Encarta Jennifer Esposito. That's the software when she would have been most prominent. But
that was awesome.
On Google, I'm going to let you know when she comes up, how many letters of her name you should type in before she comes up. So I've got to Jennifer. She's not on the list of Jennifers, which is Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence, I have no idea who she is, but she's beating out Jennifer Aniston and Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer Lawrence is Hunger Game, catnip.
Oh, that's recent.
Husker Girl. Nice dress.
In the tabloid, she's J-Law.
Is she?
Yes.
Jennifer McGuire, Jennifer Aniston pregnant, Jennifer Gardner, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Jennifer Grey, Jennifer Hudson falling right down to near the bottom, and Jennifer what? Nicole.
Dream girls. Unless you just mean she keeps poor company.
Wait, Jennifer Hudson, that's your man. That's one guy, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so Jennifer Esposito, let's see.
You go giving it the E?
Giving it the E, and she comes up top of the E's.
Whoa!
Nice.
She beats out Jennifer Egan and Jennifer Ellison weight loss DVD.
Wow, poor Jennifer Ellison.
Well, I'm surprised. There's like 8 Jennifer Ellisons in here. It's like Jennifer Ellison weight loss DVD, Jennifer Ellison Twitter, Jennifer Ellison diet plan. There's no Jennifer Ellison's tits, which I really thought was...
That's absurd.
Yeah.
That is absurd.
Did you mean Phil Esposito?
No. Jennifer, I forgot to type the rest of it. I just said the Jennifer E, and it brought up some other stuff. Jesus! Googling images Jennifer Esposito is certainly worth doing. I will keep that tab open for later.
That is a low-cut dress. That is no dress.
I have saved search off. That is no dress.
Imagine if you saw that when you're 12 years old.
Oh, there's a delightful picture of her. Let's see. 7 pictures from the left on the third row down. She looks simply adorable. There's her ass.
5, 6, 7. Is it the one where she's laying down, but the picture is vertical?
No, it's just her head.
That's when you get done with her.
Anyway, enough about Jespo.
I just wanted the Encarta anecdote, as it'll be referred to when we put this out as a comedy album, on her biography on Wikipedia, it's oddly specific in places where, under career, where it runs down her film roles and says, she's best known as Stacy in the primetime hit Spin City. She also appeared in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer playing Nancy, who is killed when a spear impales her chest.
God.
Specific!
That's very
hyper-specific. I also have to wonder if her irreconcilable differences that led to the termination of her marriage to Bradley Cooper, is it because he's gay? Because that's the hot rumor in my imagination.
I thought the hot rumor was that Will Smith is gay, but who's Bradley Cooper? Is that guy from
Hangover?
Hangover, isn't he? He's a real big deal. She did well to get with him because she's been doing nothing for 12 years.
Yeah, I think that was Wedding Crashers era Cooper, so not bad, but not Hangover Cooper. Anyway, yeah.
Hey, Amo, any other characters that tickled your fancy in this movie?
Tickle my fancy?
Wit.
Wit. Oh my god. Wit. I didn't really know who Wit is, to be honest. Wit, or was it Alicia Wit?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get Wit.
She's an appreciated redhead. I don't know actually what she's even performed in, though.
Me neither. Not my bedroom. But yeah, she was good. But the main two stars of the show for me were Theo's parents.
Mm.
Old, what's her name?
Jay Wall.
I always forget her name. Jessica Walter. Play Misty for me. She was good as basically Lucille Bluth without like the bile.
Yeah.
Like and all the kind of sassy comments. She was just kind of very nice.
She's a nice version of Lucille Bluth.
The most Lucille she'd be is when she'd call her son complaining about her husband.
Cheating on her.
Yeah.
Michael!
It's your father.
Yeah, yep.
Guys, go ahead.
I was going to say the father was that guy who was always in all those movies. And Seinfeld.
Seinfeld?
He was Bookman.
Philip Baker Hall.
Yeah.
Well, I guess between this and 50-50, the movie which posited that women are worse than cancer, PBH only now gets cast as a person with terminal cancer.
I had a
typecast like that must be somewhat depressing.
I had a revelation when you spoke of Alicia Witt.
Witt!
Because I recognized this girl in the movie, and I was like, oh, I know her from something. I know her from something. And then I thought it was someone else, and I was like, that's who she's reminding me of, but it's not her. That's all it was. So... then when you said the name, I was like, I might as well just Google the name and see. And brought up other pictures of her, and I was like, I definitely know her from something. And I looked up her IMDb, and I know her from a show called Sybil, another in the mid-90s show, which I watched every Friday night due to the fact that my sister was a big fan of Sybil, and I... tried to pretend I hated it and would always complain that it was on, and I was like, oh, I want to watch Robot Wars or something like that. I don't know, whatever the I think Father Ted might have been on a Friday evening. So I was like, I want to watch Father Ted, or I want to watch something previewing the Premiership because I'm a hard man, but I secretly enjoyed The Sybil and would watch it while making angry faces on the outside but having happy faces on the inside.
Was Wit like a teenage daughter to Sybil?
She was like
line up age wise.
She was sister. Like,
no, she was her daughter, but she was like old enough. She was like 18 and
old enough.
She was like 18 or 19 at least in the show.
Okay.
And she
still
was
lived at home.
She might not have lived at home. I don't really remember. I think Sybil was the original Sex in the City. I think that kind of sassy.
Really? I think okay. Kind of are you a Sybil or are you a Christine Baranski?
I have no idea who that is.
She was the other woman on Sybil.
Oh, that one! Oh, man.
Oh yeah!
Marianne. She was Marianne, wasn't she? That was her name. I remember all of it, Sybil. That's crazy that all my Sybil memories are coming back.
Express like my Macbeth run.
I'm actually remembering specific storylines and shit, man.
God. How did you feel about Dharma and Greg?
I watched that too.
Anyway.
That was Dharma and Greg was your prototypical like midterm break, Easter holidays. I get to watch daytime TV now. Let's take advantage of it and watch this show.
Or to be on like ITV at 3 o'clock in the morning, like before the teleshopping and teletext.
I was never up at that time when I was that age. So yeah, no, I would have watched stuff like Dharma and Greg only when I was on like home from school for like midterm break or Easter holidays or another show like that was King of Queens, but I liked that so much that I started to tape it then when I went back to school, and every day I'd come home from school I'd watch King of Queens.
D&G aired in a block here in America on the ABC channel with Spin City, so you could go Elfman followed by Esposito on the same night.
Clock them as being around the same time period. Perhaps we got one like later over here or something. I don't know. Yeah, I would have thought of Spin City as being a lot earlier.
Dharma and Greg returned to TV this year. Did you know that?
I did not.
We caught up on those characters. They were like on the. I've not seen 2.5 Men. But they, in the fallout of the Charlie Sheen stuff, I guess appeared on an episode where it was like Charlie Sheen is dead, and because they're also. Characters in the whatever that guy's name is, Chuck Lorre sitcoms, Bang Bang Theory, etc. So it was like, Dharma's back, that's huge. But
is Greg still as handsome as ever?
Greg and Dharma, like, they have not figured it out yet. Like, they have a dynamic akin to that of Blades and Theo in this film, and that's not changing anytime soon.
Do you know what was a shit version of Dharma and Greg? I gave it like 6 episodes, and I was like, "Not, not having this." Rules of Engagement featuring David Putty. Like, how could something with David Putty? Yeah, David
Spade.
Two
Davids of the 90s.
I was going to say, how could something with David Putty go wrong? But then you put David Spade into the mix, and also, what's his name? Landon Donovan's wife.
The girl
that was in it.
The girl he said hello to on the TV that time. Even on TV.
Possibly. Actually, I vaguely remember that. Maybe I said, guys, we've already talked about this movie.
and then you got distracted with wit.
Oh, I know. Oh, God. I brought back all these great memories. all right. I'll hand it over to you. The movie. Let's kick this movie off.
Right. Jessica Walter was the last thing I have written down here. Okay, opening scene, I think. Like, within the first 5 minutes of this film, Blades bent most, if not all, the rules, don't you think?
I was worried when the movie started that rules were not going to be bent.
Yeah.
But, luckily, I wasn't worried for long.
Mm-mm. Like, no. Right off the bat, it was like, oh, what is your, police detective law investigation style. Unorthodox. Extremely unorthodox. Like, he's very... he's just kind of playing it by ear. He takes shortcuts, and he does not do things by the book. Gil, we were talking about before, he just, like, arrests him very nonchalantly. You could tell they had a very lived-in relationship. Gil and Blades had been down this path before, so he didn't have to, And then, but what was strange was then a hooded man with a gun tries to, and this was the part that showed up in the trailer they showed on WWE TV all the time, sticks the gun in his face to get some sort of object of like a newspaper. It doesn't really matter. We'll get further lost as we go on. And I Edge simply backs him down with the threat of a hug with a gun stuck in his face. And I didn't know if it was just fit into his flashy yet oh-so-sassy philosophy on life, or later we find out this man is part of a insidious donut gang or something like that. So I thought maybe he recognized him by their uniform and therefore knew he would not pull the trigger. But still, what an introduction to Blades. Our explanation of what we explained, I'm sure, has made no sense, but that's not that important.
Yeah, he's just, he's not a cop, really, like a cop is.
No way. You know,
John Cena, or maybe John Cena would be, but like, the cops you see in things like the Marine in that case, but it's just, there was no, he was just didn't care. He just had no sense of, like, reality. He was just sleepwalking himself into, like, well, as it happened, no trouble. But
so casual. He's so irreverent.
David Brent, basically, like the police officer.
So, but no, and no fear of bullets. That comes back again later. He's just, the threat of being shot does not fear Blades.
Maybe that's the that's what they tell you, though, isn't it? If you, like, stiffen up, then that's how you get hurt. You gotta relax, take the bump, bend your knees.
We're also back in New Orleans, Louisiana, which I don't know if WWE Films gets a tax break for using that as a fictional setting or if it was actually filmed there, but yeah.
Is that just where their studios are or something?
It's
quicker maybe to get to the cameras and stuff. I don't know.
Exactly.
Well, I imagine it wasn't actually filmed there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, there was nothing about it. Perhaps I don't know enough landmarks, but there was nothing about it that I was like, oh, yeah, there's that thing. They're definitely in New Orleans other than Edge wearing beads.
Yeah, I think he got some, like, gumbo from Fat D later, but that's about it. Somehow moved this
the opening scene was completely preposterous, and Edge casually goes from that, like, life, like, the type of experience getting a gun pointed in your face that would make any of us just shit our pants, and it would be, like, the biggest story of our life. He just saunters back into his car, drives to court, hands over the guy he picked up to Jespo, and
fellow police officers.
Fellow police officeress, as you said, and they kind of have some kind of witty back and forth with each other, which makes you think, hey, they'd be a cool couple. I bet that's something that happens later.
Were you shipping for them?
I was shipping for them, yeah.
Edge Esposito shipper.
Edge Esposito. Jedgepo. unfortunately, it was never thought about again for the rest of the movie. There was no hints made whatsoever towards it.
Well, I mean, they had a...
That's because Edge is just so damn... Blade's just so damn casual. It's just like, yeah, not even going to bother. I'll end up having sex with her at some point.
It seems like the more favors she did for him with regard to police investigatory doing the legwork with clues and such, he kept promising her a more elaborate dinner in return.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. It was a platonic dinner, I think, was the... But they were both.
Yeah,
they were both.
Yeah, but it's a real will they or won't they that could last for really years if we ever serialize this film, which hopefully.
Yeah, bending the rules some more, like, that's going to be good.
Bending the rules too, rules were meant to be bent.
Bending the rules too.
Bend harder.
So he was on his way.
To court, because...
That's how casual the life of Blades is. He's being investigated for police corruption, and he's on administrative leave, still finds time to bring in a perp, as they say.
Yeah, indeed, and he's wearing his Hawaiian shirt, and he walks into the courtroom, and he has a newspaper, and he sits down in front of the judge jury, and he's just reading the newspaper.
And the ex-executioner, Jamie Kennedy... I hyphenated X with the word Kushner because of his famed Jamie Kennedy experiment. So, really good joke.
I'm glad you think so.
Kennedy's mother, Kennedy, is Jessica Walter, as we said, and she...
It was also shipping for her and Edge. Edge getting himself a male faction.
They had a bit of an Archer-Mallory Archer relationship, although I assume neither of you have seen Jessica Walter's cartoon, Archer.
No. Archer's a cartoon?
Yeah.
It was. I've heard Dolph Ziggler talk about it. I never thought of it in my head as a cartoon.
It's very good.
Yeah, well, if Dolph Ziggler likes it, it's clearly going to be.
Is that the one with other Arrested Development characters? People?
Yes. Judy Greer is on it, and some other funny people. John Benjamin talks like this, etc.
I'm laughing already.
Chris Parnell. And others, so funny. But anyway, yeah, it is very much a... We get a whole lot of Jessica Walter biographical info real fast. She's very much play Misty for me, Jessica, a star of the past. And
an
Edge
old-timey
knows
actress.
Yes, exactly.
And Edge is a big, big, big fan.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't realize that her son, Theo, is trying to put Edge away.
Right.
Which he fails to do.
So nonchalant and just effervescent, really. But yeah, big rules stickler here, and Edge is what? I think skimming money from drug dealers or something, so they brought him up on police corruption charges, and he's not too fazed by it.
No. I mean, it's not huge. Corruption, really?
Mm-mm.
I've seen worse.
You know, here's the thing, though. He gets the job done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he does.
Don't throw the book at him.
Next up was my favorite scene of the movie. After a hard day at the court, unsuccessful, found out he probably wasn't going to get some big... Actually, no, I don't think he had found out at this point. I was going to say he was trying to get this big district attorney job, but he was hoping for that. Tough day at court. Goes to meet his... Jamie Kennedy, this is. Goes to meet his... we're not sure if his girlfriend or wife, but say a elegant-looking, take-no-shit kind of lady. And goes to meet her for coffee, and they're just sitting in this... coffee house and sort of eating a bit of lunch, or it's a very, very casual, low key affair. And then she goes, "So, like, I'm just breaking up with you. You're gonna have to leave." And like, whoa,
husband of 17 years.
Yeah. Then I was gonna build to that. I just at this point thought it was girlfriend breaking up a boyfriend that had been seeing each other for a few months. I was like, Jesus, fairly nonchalant, harsh way to do it. And he was like, he wasn't even that, like, broken up. He was like, wait, what? God, come on. And but then they say that she's his wife. And I'm like, oh, geez, it's divorce being talked about in this over lunch. And
the sanctity of marriage.
But then it's wife of 17 years. I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like, they have a bunch of kids. I'm like, God damn, she just has really picked her spot here to just, like, and then I just think to myself, how would one go about doing this? And I imagine it would be a different scene than just eating lunch she wasn't even like going crazy yelling. It wasn't like they got in a big dispute. She was just like, you know, I'm kind of sick of you, so this is done.
Thanks for lunch.
You gotta leave the house. By the way, you do know I own our house, so you're gonna be the one leaving. So
she was wearing the trousers in that relationship.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, bitchy trousers.
She came from a moneyed family, and she was sick of Theo pursuing the rat race, careerism, the law, the rules, when he could be doing extremely lucrative private practice work. So I don't know why all this backstory was important to the Theo character, but we certainly got a lot of it.
He was down in his luck. They wanted to show he was just having no luck, unlike Edge, Blades, who repeatedly told us that I just copped Edge of the Blade, Edge. Just copped that. Perhaps
ooh,
the Journey song as our music for this show. But, yeah, so... I like that scene a lot just because it was completely unfathomable. And
it was a gut punch.
Those are always my favorites. But he goes from there to having more bad luck because he's got this swish car that that he likes to drive, the Hawk.
And, heirloom.
Big family heirloom, only ever broken out in special occasions. And because the van is broken down or whatever, the wife is driving the Hawk around carelessly. And that sets the stage for the fact that the Hawk is soon stolen to make his day get even worse.
Alan, I don't like to defame people, especially on podcasts, but his wife was not a good person.
No, not at all.
I don't know how rich she was, but
she wasn't rich with character.
I would describe her as a, well, let's say $1 billion. Let's say if she was like royalty and like she was rich.
Yeah.
Let's say $1 billion. She's worth $1 billion.
No,
she
yep.
would be $1 billion. No, not a, well, she's not really old enough to be a queen, but
no.
Princess?
Yes, yes.
Yes, okay.
Thank you for condensing that into a buzz phrase.
A readable sentence.
Or not to mention, okay, if we haven't gone there yet, he also loses the district attorneyship promotion. His wife left him. His car has been taken.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler. And it is his birthday. Okay?
His birthday.
All this is happening on his birthday. Knight of Champions isn't even on his birthday. Really, this day is going.
I didn't get that joke.
That is McMahon's $1 billion princess's father's millions when the caller says, he calls him to congratulate him about winning some of the millions, and he's so happy. Thank you, Vince. And then he says, Vince, guess what else? Knight of Champions is on my birthday.
I think I picked it as my favorite moment of the decade.
That was
may have been your MVP and not Montel Vontavious Porter for 2008.
I actually forgot about that, but I'll never forget Vince getting Rickrolled.
Mm-hmm. What a weird moment in time that was.
What an amazing
moment. Seth fell on him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that
in
was
hindsight,
little...
I guess we have to assume that men who would eventually form the Nexus dropped that cell.
Which was the one where he was going to be having a funeral, but the Benoit thing happened? Was that, or was that the car blown up?
That was the
year before when he blew up.
Okay, so what happened with the set? Like, did anything ever happen? Like,
Seth
he just
fell
came
on
back?
Him, and then he came back and got kicked in the head by Randy Orton.
Oh god! And when was
that ever explaining it?
When was he in the coma and he woke up and was like, "Daniel Bryan's the U.S. champion"? What put him in the coma? That was Nexus.
That was the next year when Nexus beat him.
Okay.
Which he also didn't mind.
Vince is due something really shit happening to him then, by my calculations.
It's a bad run for the chairman.
Yeah.
But he's making great films. I'm assuming he gets producer's credit. Final of these lengthy, I think once we clear like this first part, we're going to blow through the rest of the movie real fast.
I think we're already going through pretty fast.
Did you notice, I misheard, I thought the incumbent district attorney was named Bart Gunn. It was Clark Gunn.
I remember he was... Tio was just aghast at who the person chosen to replace the current DA. He was like, "What, that guy?" And then the guy
was more of a politician.
The guy told him, "Well, people like him, and they think you're a dickhead, so probably gonna go with him."
He was willing to assuage the rules, bend them, if you will. And yeah, a big thing of his. Closing arguments in the case against Blades was that police have to be on the ball and trustworthy, and that they couldn't be trusted. So he became persona non grata over at the station.
Yes, and speaking of which, he went over there to get help from the cops with his stolen car situation. And Amo, how did the cops react to him?
I don't remember. I thought they, beat him up and stuff on the street.
Oh, that was
chased him?
That was just before. He got pulled over by cops.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, it's my birthday, my wife left me. It's all gone wrong.
And then they just pretty much tased them for the crack.
I just tased them and filmed it and put it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We then, in the next 5 minutes of scenes, got all 39 puns in the English language on electrocution.
Yeah, when he went to the police office and the police office? The police station?
the principal's office.
When he went to the police office, he was hit with that barrage of puns and they wouldn't help him, and they told him, hey, be.
Told him to bolt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which rhymes with bolt.
They brought up the charges.
In the height of irony, then, the man who he stumbles upon to help him out is one Mr. Blades, who is all, he's not doing anything else, so why not?
Who I presumed was responsible for the rib plate on him with being pulled over, but no, it turns out he's actually a super nice guy. He wanted to help him, and help him get his car back. In fact, he thought that the officers of the law had taken the car as another rib, and he was like, hey guys, enough's enough here. Blade's pretty good dude in my book.
He was pretty very good dude. Nice. I mean, he was trying to help. He was just very helpful. And, you know, it did make you wonder, what were his motives?
Good question, yeah.
I don't know.
I think he was just...
it's just nice, I guess. He's just bored and nice.
I think, yeah, bored. I was going to say, he was just looking for something to do. Like, he couldn't go to work, and the Hawaiian shirt shop was closed. So he was happy to follow the case. And, hey, he was told he couldn't. He was told to not get involved in police activity. And as a known rule bender, all he needed to.
Oh, so, also he had big leads with that newspaper and the codes therein, and he was trying to crack that case while skirting the rules of not being allowed to police.
Yeah, exactly. And the clues in the newspaper was the point where the person I was watching it with were tapped out on the movie. They looked at the screen as this newspaper had various things circled to form all the clues. And they screamed, that's bullshit. Who would ever do that? That's so stupid. And pretty much quit on the movie.
Well, this person's never seen the Zodiac killer man who committed murders via clues in the newspaper. Well, not via clues in the newspaper.
Inspired by.
Mm.
So yeah, the edge, your blades goes hunting around, trying to follow up these clues, and the first person he comes across is a sassy young little black girl sitting on a step, and Blades...
I thought it was Naomi.
Blades asks if she knew who... There was a car sitting outside her house, and he asked if her parents were around. She's like, no. And he was like, are they at work? And she was like, no. And he was like, do you know when they'll be home? She's like, not dead, dead. And he was like, oh. And he goes, well, who are you with? And she's like, my granny. And he's like, is she around? No. And he was like, okay. And he was like, whose car is that? My brother's. Is he around? No. Where is he? In jail? I'm like, oh, God.
This girl had it tough.
But she didn't. She had a
Nintendo.
Yeah, she did. She starts giving her commentary, or her granny's commentary on Blades from what they had seen on his trial, which was, of course, made the news. So, and not the biggest fan of Blades was this young girl's granny. And, yeah.
I'm trying to piece together the mystery of this, having not thought about it while I was watching it, only now. So he must have been... That license plate was one of the license plates in the newspaper?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm saying? Okay.
He had basically a shopping list of license plates that all these cars were being stolen, but it turns out it was the cars that were just being stolen. The person who owned the car was being killed also. Yeah. So,
what a needlessly elaborate system to set up some hits.
There was the next, I think it was the next one, but it was quite great because it was this guy, Ed Mackey, I believe.
And Mackey!
They go to this place and it says outside, mixed martial arts. And I was like, ooh. How current, how progressive the mixed martial arts. going to see a bunch of dudes in here in their tap-out gear doing jiu-jitsu, rolling around, cracking the jokes, drinking
Kimuras,
some kickboxing maybe. Nope, load of dudes with swords and just crazy,
Martial arts were extremely mixed.
Yeah, very, very, very mixed martial.
Including nunchaku and swords, everything you said. And wide range of ages and genders as well.
Yes. And so...
So, Sensei Maki, I guess, just has all of his disciples get in the way when they try to run him down for some questioning, right?
Yep.
Wasn't this not till ages, though? What about the guy with the eye patch? Remember they had him tied up?
I don't remember that.
It was like the old dudes.
Oh, yeah! He broke in. He was looking for Gil, right? And he went to Gil's dad's house? Apartment? And then someone else... Oh, that guy was in the donut gang.
Yes.
And he, too, was
This was after what I'm talking about. My thing came first.
Okay. It's plausible.
I don't think it matters anyway.
Yeah, it's
kind of a series of kind of going places.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. These things did not tie into each other whatsoever. But
has the parking enforcement guy shown up yet?
The donut gang, the head of the donut gang.
Imagine
was,
just listening to this.
Right, weren't we supposed to give people a heads up so they could, if they dare, watch these movies along with us? Well, no point now.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Hey, everyone, stop listening. Watch the movie and go back to the show. Well, hey, when they see the show posted, they can go watch. You don't have to listen
to
the show.
It's a personal choice.
We are live. You can wait a couple of days, give yourself a chance to watch the movie, all that jazz. But Donut Gang, head of Donut Gang, DVDVR's Dean Rasmussen, a great man who... One day I hope to have on this show. I've talked to him on a Tim Noel show a few times. Dean loves me.
Can you address the Tilda controversy?
There's no controversy. Dean created the Tilda Bang, and Brian admits that. But Dean loves me for whatever reason. I love Dean for many, many great reasons, because he's amazing. And Dean Rasmussen was the head of the Donut Gang in this movie, and I like to think that prior to coming out and talking to Blades, he was backstage watching like a Yutaka Yoshie match and laughing about how fat he is. There is that. He was like the bad leader of a gang, but he was like, he just wanted to move on and get on with his bacon, and he didn't really want to get involved in too much shit, and he was happy to help out Blades and bring about some justice, and just he wanted to make some food.
They had a very Starsky and Hutch and their criminal friend relationship.
Yeah.
Like, there's an understanding there. They're two sides of the same coin, and they're just trying to get on in this world. And there are bigger fish to fry.
Bigger
donuts
to fry.
Yeah. I really enjoyed all of the donut eating scenes that we saw in the trailer when they came up. Did you guys sing along with them when they happened? The one is, I guess you couldn't really speak to, but where he and another policeman chew donuts and converse at the same time, that was great. And then, of course, it's like warm maple syrup being poured on your tongue. Should be the pool quote for this film. It is figuratively like that.
Yes, that's never happened to me.
I've never had the thought eating a donut a lot. See, I have thought when eating a jam donut that it tastes like jam being poured in my tongue, but that's about it.
Kinky. I liked Edge's truck in this movie. And I think there's some merchandise there to be made. You know, little kids' toys. That orange truck.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the orange stinger car in Mask Vehicles lore, so I'd probably have bought this if I was a kid. I think it's a potential for a possible Edge return appearance that he can ride out in that vehicle. And,
yeah.
Like Stone Cold with the stuff.
great.
He should be wearing his
would have been great in, during his feud with Del Rio, right?
Yes.
Car versus car.
Oh, put them up on top of that that building that Big Show and Hogan were on.
The Joseph Louis Arena.
Yeah, the Joe.
Or maybe it was Cobo Hall. Wait, is that the same thing? I don't know.
Aren't they like beside each other or something?
That makes sense.
Anyway, so yeah, we had them going around from doing these different things. Blades was being typically cool and sassy, and the
very much of both.
But Theo was getting more and more frustrated with his laid back attitude, and would repeatedly scream at him to cop himself on and treat.
Wait, have we put them together yet?
Yeah. I said they hooked up in an attempt to find his car. But you know, Edge was trying to do so much more than just find his car, because he knew what Theo didn't know, and that was not only was the car being stolen, but also Theo was going to be killed.
Mm-hmm. His license plate was on the list.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, for a man with multiple cars, and that car has to be in his father's name, that makes no sense, but okay.
I suppose. Maybe his father's on the list.
Oh, God. They're brought together when a suicidal bookman locks himself in Theo's bedroom, right? With a handgun.
With a gun.
And that really did not escalate in the way you'd think it would. Edge, once again, no fear of bullets, which is my only weakness. He just kind of barges in and defuses the situation.
He barged in behind Jessica Walter. Kind of a Daniel Bryan AJ sort of. He pushed her first to go in. And the only reason Bookman didn't shoot was because he thought Edge was his brother.
You know what is interesting? I feel like there is a lot of parallels between the relationship of Jessica Walter and Blades in this movie and Lucille Bluth and Jean Parmesan.
Jean, you've done it again. I suppose so. She does call him, and he does show up. And he's very good.
He says, "It's Nick Blades, how you doing?" Lack of disguises, though.
I was going to say,
Jamie Kennedy was the master of disguise.
Yeah, he was. You know, the weird thing about Jamie Kennedy's X show was that it was filmed in front of a live studio audience. What was the point of that, remember?
And how could they see the X?
Well, he, like, presented it, and then it cut away to, you know, like, the extra bit where he's on his own.
Yes.
That was, like, in front of a studio audience. So what are they watching? Why would you go to a recording of that? Just to see Jamie Kennedy?
Yeah, to see Jamie Kennedy introduce clips on the Kennedy-tron.
But yeah, and then Bookman. I guess Bookman was going a bit old.
Old and cancery. Happens to the best of us.
I suppose he shared a moment with his son.
And delusional, or whatever you say, when your mental faculties start to slip.
Cena?
It's Cena.
For once, I've trumped Justin on a wordplay. Very happy with that achievement.
Maybe Justin himself is becoming Cena.
Uh-oh, I'm slipping.
Yes.
You guys are in your podcasting prime still. I think the mid-20s must be when that peaks.
I hit 27 in a few weeks. Do I still count as mid-20s?
I considered myself mid-20s up until...
Alvarez is going to be 37 in a few weeks, that means. Because he's 10 years older than me to the week. So, like, that's really weird. Because I think of 37 as old, because that's usually when premiership players stop playing. So I've always thought of that as being a real... Yeah, unless you're a goalkeeper. Brian's not tall enough to be a goalkeeper. But
Will Brian get on testosterone replacement therapy?
Maybe. Although I doubt it, knowing his feelings that he's expressed towards all that stuff on occasion recently.
Anyway, yes, senility. A senile bookman.
Yeah, he had a moment with his son... regarding a mattress.
And a mattress.
Like, it was a very sort of sweet. I suppose it was quite sweet, wasn't it?
Yeah. Explain the scene, Emma, for those who haven't seen it.
Well, the bookman was on the bed, relaxing with his gun.
The sun came in. Fired a bullet through a door, which everyone laughs off. Oh.
Sun came in, had a bit of a chat with him, and the two of them lay down on the bed. And Bookman was just commenting on the mattress. Actual mattress. And the son looked at him, tear in his eye, and said, "Yep, it's a hell of a mattress." And it hung on them for about 30 seconds as sweet music played. Also, this movie did kind of have music like the whole time. I've seen movies, they don't do that. You know, like during dialogue and stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just like kind of a... like a kind of a funky bass, like over every piece of dialogue.
I hadn't thought of it that until you actually said it there. I was like, that's true.
That doesn't happen in movies, does it?
No.
The movie had more scoring than the Penguins Flyers series. That's a specific joke for our one Canadian listener, David Gagnon, or however you pronounce his name. was that? Oh, yeah, yeah. And then he caresses his father, who is asleep, and then we move on. And then Edge and Kennedy are set out to find the vehicle.
And that's when they encounter the donuts, the iron bars, and other... What else did they encounter?
Oh, also, the sensei... Ed Mackey is murdered by an evil male meter maid.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are you guys more intimidated by, a donut gang or an evil meter maid?
The meter maid, because he'll kill me and give me a ticket. Donut gang will kill me and give me a donut. I'll take the donut over the ticket, and the two killings cancel each other out. So... There you go, exactly. Guys, I'm going to leave you here for a minute as I go to the bathroom, and I want you to do me the favor of introducing to our listeners the character of Wit, Alicia Wit, who would have a prominent role out of nowhere later in the film.
For reals?
Okay.
Yeah, Wit actually first showed up. She was like a...
We're not actually going to do this, are we?
Oh, yeah, we usually do our own thing?
Yeah.
Are you suggesting we bend the rules?
Let's do it. Bend them out of shape. I say we break them. Bend them to the point of breaking.
Let's bite the hand that feeds us. Let's visualize Alan going to the bathroom.
Let's do it.
Do you think he does it with enthusiasm?
I think he does it with like one fist in the air. Just thumping his fist. No, maybe he does it sitting down. I bet he's that type of guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a little fancy boy.
The better to watch probably streaming wrestling matches on a laptop whilst doing it.
Hmm. That probably can't be good. Remember there's like a craze where you could get a phone in your bathroom?
Like on the wall? Or
yeah. That doesn't happen anymore, does it?
You're like a big CEO always having to make deals on Wall Street, maybe. Constantly keep that happening.
You see it in hotels, I guess, sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's just a call for like, hey, can you send up a complimentary toothbrush? They have to.
So you couldn't just go into the room and make that.
No.
Hello, I need some toilet paper semi-urgently.
Mm-hmm.
Can you provide it now?
Anyway, yeah, Alan sits down when he pees, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What else is going on?
In his bathroom?
Yeah.
I don't know. I imagine it's very clean. He strikes me as a clean man.
Fastidious, yep.
Kind of a Jerry Seinfeld type of... I'm going to see Jerry Seinfeld next week.
Does he have new material? I guess I see him on, like, the Letterman show every once in a while, and he does have new observations about, like... You ever notice these iPads?
I was going to say, it's all going to be iPhones and a Kardashian, maybe. Instead of, like, some 90s superstar. I don't know. I don't want that, though. I want jokes about answering machines and two-way pagers.
There you go. Yeah, I saw him low, like, 10 years ago during the last season of Seinfeld, so I got vintage material. And I wonder if it has gone up or gone down, the amount of people in the audience who shout things at him, such as, "Where is Kramer?" and "Hello, Newman."
I'm going to say it happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and like circa 1998, it was the people I think came expecting to see the show and not, like, they thought the first 30 seconds of his stand-up were the opening credits, and then they would move into plot in Monk's, Jerry's apartment, and things like that.
This is a very long opening gambit.
Maybe they filmed them all in one lump sum and then just devised them out. And of course, I don't think the last season included a stand-up opening anymore. But
no, I think that even went before then, probably.
Yeah, yeah. May have gone away with Larry David.
Mm. Did he write them?
I don't think so.
Have you read that guy's book who wrote for Seinfeld? My friend was telling me about it there yesterday.
Mm-mm.
It's the book. You know the guy?
Is it a coffee table book?
No. It's like an e-book. So you gotta get an iPad or whatever. And it's the guy who was the boring guy who kept forgetting Elaine. Remember him?
Yeah.
And he was like, she'd tell him all these things and then he didn't remember. And then she remembered all the insignificant things. Like, and he kept talking about his mother and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway. He, like, wrote for Seinfeld. He wrote the episode.
Vaguely Ray Romano-esque.
He wrote the episode with Kenny Banya, where he wanted to give Jerry the suit, and then he wanted the meal.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote that episode. Apparently that happened to him. Oh, that was also the episode where Elaine paid for that English guy to come over. Stay with her. And apparently he did that as well. But with, like, a woman. She, like, just started living in his apartment, but, like, going out socially on her own.
Oh boy. We've all been there.
We've all been there. But, yeah, he wrote a book. Apparently it's really, really funny. It's about his year with Seinfeld.
Just a year and enough to get on TV.
I like him as an actor as well.
Did you hear about Mr. Krueger attempting to kill himself?
Mr. Krueger? Freddy Krueger?
George's boss from the last season.
Krueger Toys, wasn't it?
Krueger. Well, he started at Toys and then moved on to Krueger Industrial Smoothing.
Was that the season that where George pretended to be, like, have a bad leg?
Yeah, that was a Krueger, I'm pretty sure.
Remember the montage of that?
Krueger went to Festivus as well.
Why did he try and kill himself? Depressed or something?
He was trying to go out on a high note.
Hmm.
That's his Seinfeld plot. He locked himself out of his office again. But yeah, she has a legal background. She works on the case, I think, under Jamie Kennedy, I wish, and she was part of his prosecuting team, and then she just, like, a coworker, a legal coworker. I assumed she was introduced to be, like, a replacement redemption love interest for his wife. She seemed way nicer, but...
She had a total of one scene where she was literally just in the background, I don't think she said anything, and another scene, which was about 2 minutes long, where she just had a conversation with... with Theo. So that was
absolute, like, TV procedural rules where if you recognize the actor in a bit part, they're going to play a prominent role down the line, even if they seem completely insignificant. But I should have been on my toes. I never saw it coming.
No.
I was glad she appeared. But I tell you, she was such an insignificant force early that when she reappeared, I didn't even recognize her or remember her. Like, who's this feisty young thing?
Like, that's the kind of other shoe that drops not on the ultimate opportunist. He's usually perpetrating twists like that on unsuspecting
ultimate shoe
babyface champions. The ultimate opportunist.
The heel?
Good work, Aimo.
Aimo.
Does that settle? It's definitely a free show now. let's see. I suppose we'll talk about how the prominent role that she ended up playing, unless there's anything before that that we need to get to.
Things happened. I don't
they
think
they chased Gil and stuff, didn't they?
Well, they get a call from her, and she's with Gil. Gil has quote unquote kidnapped her, and she's saying she's scared and she needs their help. So they go to help.
Like, oh no, character we saw. Alicia Witt surely wrapped in like 3 hours. They took her to 2 locations, and then. That is a concluding arc.
Her hair was very different in both scenes, though. So,
well, she had been wearing a hood up in the second one and messed up her hair a little bit, I guess.
Because
baddies wear hoods up. Spoiler, she turns heel. They go to help her, and there's this big shootout, and all the various... characters that had been seen earlier all show up and everyone's shooting at everyone. You really have no idea what's going on, but then all of a sudden the Wit just stands up and she's like, "Ha! I'm a heel."
She shot Gil.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was a good part. This is my trenchant wrestling observation, is when so Gil is pretending it's a work, her kidnapping is a work, and they want Blades to bring the film's MacGuffin, which is the newspaper with all the clues in it. Why do they need that? Wait, why does she need that? That's her thing to get those people murdered. What does she need it for?
She lost track.
To tie up the evidence?
She wanted to do the crossword, maybe.
She couldn't remember who the seventh guy she was going to kill was. She's like, I've already got the first six. I was like, I can't remember seven. It's in
seven
the-
down.
We need to get back.
So Edge cops to Gil that he didn't have it. The donut gang ringleader. Donut ring is a thing, right? A ring donut? Is that those things that are twisty? Is that a ring donut?
Yeah.
This is unimportant. We're getting bogged down.
That's a pretzel, isn't it?
A ring donut's just a donut with a hole in it.
Yeah, that... It's
are
a
talking
regular
about?
Donut, huh?
Okay.
Okay, then what is a twisty donut called?
Never heard of that.
Pretzel.
Yeah.
It's twisty, yeah. I guess.
You're right.
Mm.
Where were we? Okay, so then she... Within the hoodie must have been concealing a gun. She shoots Gil. Gil was her go-between to facilitate these murders. And Blades is like, oh, nice way to treat your employee. And then Wit says, more of an independent contractor. So, satire.
She also shot the backup that Blades had called in. One Mr. Esposito shot her right in her beautiful chest.
Hell of a target. Yeah, I just shot her dead. She's dead.
Which shot tit.
So she's definitely dead. In fact, Edge tried to drop JKX off at his house to tackle this by himself because it's too dangerous. And then he sends Jen Esposito to protect him. But then as soon as she gets there, she's like, this is way too dangerous. We better go follow him. So she runs on the scene and is immediately shot in the chest. So she's definitely dead. Really sad. And then just a big firefight ensues between, I guess, Alicia Witt's gang? And
no, the donut gang, Dean Rasmussen and his pals come and,
yeah,
and help
Edge,
out the baby.
Edge asks right. him to help him out. So the good guy, bad guys, and the bad guys have a firefight. I think the hot cops got involved at some point, if we're going to stay true to that line of references. And one-armed man's arm fell off, and he teaches Jamie Kennedy the life lesson. That's why you always bend the rules. But... what was the... She was the daughter of the secret daughter. You'd think this could come out somewhere in, like, the diligence you do when you hire someone for an important government position.
Yeah.
She was the bastard daughter of a death row inmate, James Van Riemsdyk or something like that, who Kennedy put on death row, and she was out to avenge a whole bunch of people for him before he died because of, you know, reasons. So she perpetrated this entire insidious scheme until she was shot in the chest by blades. So,
From behind.
I was not prepared at all for the climax of the movie at this point. I was very confused.
Yeah, it was going along because it was a few moments there before all the shooting where it became quite a sweet movie. They were watching Jessica Walter's...
Play Misty for Me.
Play Misty for Me, and the old guy was old, and it was just kind of nice and calm, and then it just all went crazy.
It was his birthday.
It was his birthday.
Like the LOL cat trying to eat that cake.
But
well,
then,
I have a question. In this massive escalating firefight scene of people trying to hurt each other, where was Batista's Muay Thai dude?
He would have fit in perfectly.
He would have fit in perfectly. I'm sure he would have leg-sweeped someone and grabbed their gun as it fell down.
He was in that mixed martial arts gym.
He must have been.
He must have been in there. Perhaps he was Ed Mackey wearing a costume.
That was a great postmodern moment in the gym where instead of paying homage to the Indiana Jones scene where a sword-wielding man shows off only to be shot with a gun by Indiana Jones, Edge says, this is like that scene in Indiana Jones where a sword-wielding man shows off swordsmanship only to be shot by a gun. So, excellent self-referentiality. It's the nature of film, the artifice of fiction, all a commentary on culture. Esposito, she's okay, Alan.
Don't worry.
Thank God.
Bulletproof chest. She,
explained maybe why no one in this movie is afraid of bullets. They're all secretly clad in bulletproof vests.
But did the masked man put the gun right up to Blade's face?
Bulletproof
right.
Face.
Yep. Ed Leslie must have one of those.
Nice.
What about the car, Alan? Where's the car? The whole point of this movie.
The car. The car was never actually stolen.
What?
It was on the list, but it turns out it hadn't been stolen. It was just borrowed by Theo's dad, the crazy senile dad. He just was using it to what was he doing? He was getting cheap parking by parking it up. I can't even remember.
Was he not supposed to be taking it in his condition, or I don't know. Whatever the case is, he was driving it on the side and hiding it in hotel parking garages.
Yeah.
So they went to get the car. They were like, yes, we've got it. Time to drive home very safely.
I was like,
safely. Okay,
film that's over. Everything's been taken care of. That case is a wrap. And then the movie ended. Is that what happened?
I think, credits did appear.
No, you're missing something key. Throughout the whole movie.
You're missing something ignition.
Throughout the whole movie, Theo's mom kept on going to Theo, that car better be okay. You know how much your dad loves that car. It's his life, etc., etc. And... she was also saying to her husband, that car better not be, we better get that back. You know how much that means to your son, etc., etc. And then there's this moment between the son and the dad at the end where the son's like, I'm sorry about the car, because the car got totally shot up.
Yeah, don't
got stolen.
Skip over that part. There is this fake out. We forgot all about the evil, murderous meter maid man. I don't think it would have been out of the realm of possibility to assume that he was one of the many people who got struck down in that dockside firefight. But no, he looms large.
He just appeared.
He just appeared. Boom. As he randomly
SUV
did.
Or something.
Yeah. So they're on the top of Cobo Hall, and Blades and T.O. in the Hawk get cut off by this dude, Meter Maid Man, and his SUV, and a game of chicken commences.
Well, they played a game where they lined up to see who's chicken. It's a little game they call chicken.
For sure.
And it turns out neither of them are chicken. Neither of them have even seen a chicken. And crashed into each other. And because the Hawk is like a big, powerful car, that won. And the old meter maid died.
This big parking enforcement tank. Both sides in this conflict had guns, and they were like, well, we are in cars, so I guess the cinematic way to settle this would be to drive at each other. I guess the moral of the story was that the car was such a great car that he never had a chance.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's the power of the Hawk.
But what was his agenda then, the meter maid? What was he doing?
I don't know. Maybe he was with son.
The brother,
but he was the one who was performing all the hits on the license plate victims. If we never established that before, he put Ed Mackey in a trunk.
Poor Ed Mackey.
His mixed martial arts discipline was guns.
That it was. So the Hawk got destroyed in the game of chicken. So. The point I was getting to was Theo was saying to his dad, I know how much you love that Hawk. I'm sorry it was destroyed. And his dad looks at him and goes, what? What are you talking about? To me, it was just a car. It was you who adored it. And then they both had the realization that they were just being played by the mom. That it was always her that just wanted the Hawk to be pristine and perfect. And as Theo's dad says, hey, it's just a car. And I think then I think that might have been when the credits rolled.
Well, there is one more scene, but in fact his quote was, it's like I always say, it's just a car. Does he always say that?
He never said that to me.
Why do you always say that? That's not the thing you'd always say.
When does that come up? But there is a real twist because, in fact, kind of cruel, because Kennedy is broken up. He has to confess to his father and, like, crush him emotionally that the car has been totaled, and then Philip Baker Hall goes to retrieve the car, and I guess in his senility, or maybe he just assumes it's stolen, he thinks he lost the car, and he sadly tells Theo that he lost the car.
That's like, right.
Oh, what a shame.
Well, he's been parking it up in the parking lot, and then he goes to get it.
And it wasn't there because it had been destroyed and towed away.
In the final scene, so Blades, despite all of his heroics and the cases he cracked through his investigatory skills, he, because of the rules, is still on corruption charges. And Assistant District Attorney Kennedy drops the case. And, but some other police authority figure is still trying to, suss things out. And he's like, we never even mentioned that Blades had a stereotypical, shouting black police chief in this movie, but I guess that was just a nice touch. Anyway, it was always stressed to him, don't do any official police work. And so the facade was that he was doing freelance private investigating to find this car. Well, he was really cracking the case, guys. So then he asks, known rule aficionado, Jamie Kennedy, a man for whom rules are paramount. He leads his life by every rule. And where has it gotten him? In his late 30s, not far. Professionally, emotionally, socially, ecumenically, and in
that
moment...
is a very equanimical matter.
Hey!
A big moment of truth where the authoritative man who wants to bring the hammer down asks Kennedy if Blades at any point misrepresented himself as a police officer in effectively breaking the rules. And Kennedy says, well, he did eat a lot of donuts. On this day, I see clearly
everything come to life. Yeah, so you skipped ahead. It should have been... On this day. You think you know me. You think you know me. we did skip one other closing scene when the gunfight all ended and Jespo wasn't dead and they drop her home. And, of course, having taken off her bulletproof vest, she was now conveniently left in a skimpy, breast-revealing vest. And she looks quite wellness. And she has aged admirably since her days. Because she wasn't exactly like an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old in Spin City. Like, you would have thought of her as late 20s at the earliest. So she's probably in the 40s range, I'd say now. And she's looking good. But that's pretty much a wrap as far as this movie. And I enjoyed it. It was ridiculous. It was preposterous. It was hard to follow at times. But it was fun, and it wasn't too long, and it was fun to do a review of, so that's really all I asked for from a WB movie. I also occasionally will ask for, and if I get it, great. If I don't, I can look past it, but I do also really appreciate a little girl driving a bus.
I never know what to think of these movies, to be honest. I'm always, I don't know. Another one where I was like, I don't know what to think of this.
I think we lost Justin. Justin, are you there? I'm gonna press stop, Amo, and just make sure it's
good old days. Okay, and there we go. Right side of town.
Oh.
Well, we got cut off there, guys. Thanks to Justin, but we're all back in time now to pretty much wrap up the show here. The movie, I would give it on a 5-star scale. I would give it 5 stars.
as with any Alan star rating, you always knock off 3/4 of a star to get back to the mean.
4 to 4.25 stars. Some would say generous.
I tried to say while I got cut off and I got crickets, and I thought, hey, it's not that trite of a joke. So I'll try it again.
Oh, do you want to hear an awesome post that was made about me on a message board?
Please.
Definitely.
Yes, this is amazing. And I'm sure this will... okay, so it's... It came completely out of nowhere from some dude who I've actually never heard of before. SLL. And... He says, I'll give the context. So it was the this list of wrestlers was posted, like the top 100 wrestlers that these guys think, and people were laughing about how it's a ridiculous list or whatever. And
a ridiculous list.
Yeah, and I was not involved in this thread at all. I said nothing. And let me see where. Okay, so someone says, this is pretty amusing considering this WKO is full of posts ridiculing guys like Alan Forel who have the temerity to enjoy the wrong kind of wrestling. And then this guy's response was...
Wrong side of town.
This SLL dude was, If Alan Forel was just an impossibly hyperactive dude whose taste in wrestling was the diametric opposite of my own, it'd be one thing. But the impossibly over-the-top hysterical praise for just about everything he watches, backed with little to no actual substantive commentary, and tendency to get all passive-aggressive and indignant if you disagree with him, makes him a bigger target than he otherwise would be.
Oh, he's done you there.
I'm fucked. But, Rover...
He ticks just about every box I have on this list.
Oh, yeah. Just nail... Gets me in a nutshell right there.
Absolutely. Dead to rights.
Am I being passive-aggressive or indignant here by bringing this up on the show? Maybe I am.
You're being passive-passive.
I posted in the thread, I'm a target. Fuck. And then several people leapt to my defense because they like me.
You're a good guy.
There's more posts about it. I'll have to read them later.
Ooh, something for later. Something for your next pee break, according to the fan fiction that Amo and I wrote during your intermission.
Plans for later. Jennifer Esposito Google images. Responses to that thread.
Do you think Jennifer is on estrogen replacement therapy?
I don't know. Oh, I nearly bought something with, like, female hormone shit in it yesterday. I went to Holland and Barrett, a nutrition store here in, I think it's all over the world, I'm not sure. But I went to it, and I was going to buy fish oil things that they had on offer. And the labels all looked really similar for the different variations. And one of them, I picked up two thinking they were the same because it was buy one, get one for a cent deal. And I picked up two, thought they were the same. And then the girl quoted me a big price. And I was like, I kind of looked at her inquisitively. And then she goes, these aren't both the same. And I go, oh. And she goes, this is evening primrose oil. And I'm like, okay, not knowing what the fuck that is.
Hello to you
and
too.
It sounds pleasant.
Then she goes, that's what I thought. I was like, God damn, why not? Rather, she was like, are these both for you? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I go, is this one, I picked up the non-evening primrose oil, and I go, is this one not on offer? And she goes, no, it's just this one holding up, pointing at the primrose. And I was like, oh, well, just I'll take two of them then. And then she goes, they're for you, right? And I go, yeah. She goes, more a female thing. I was like, huh? She was like, yeah, it's for female hormones and stuff. And she was like, so do you want that? And I was like, no, probably best I don't get that. So yeah, I'll just take my usual one here without the offer, and I won't grow boobs, thanks. So spent a little extra but won't grow boobs, so some would say that's a negative negative, but I'll just say that's a negative and a positive. But that was pretty much all I think we wanted to say about the movie. So unless you guys have anything else you want to bring up, I will get to wrapping this up before we come close to the 2-hour mark, and I'll also throw out one more plug for the random goodness.
I'd love to talk to you guys again sometime.
I would too.
Have another.
By the way, I do think we really hit the old random goodness theme by randomly discussing random sitcoms and shows from the mid-90s.
Mm.
Like, if he was to make... I know Bob has said he's probably not going to be making any more random goodness, but if he was, Bob, I know you're listening to this, I suggest a music video which doesn't include any wrestling, but it's just clips from Sybil, Dharma and Greg, Spin City, King of Queens, what were the
Seinfeld,
other
ones? Seinfeld, Arrested Development.
Yeah. Even the
legacy of shows. That Archer.
Yeah.
There's an office in there as well.
Sure.
That could make for a great MV. So think about that, Bob. Think about it. Okay.
So what else is going on? Cena Brock was awesome. This show is now much...
I knew there was something else. You wanted to talk a little bit about Cena Brock, so make it. I agree with everything you're going to say, unless you say it was stupid. Then I disagree.
It was awesome, and Brock should have won, but...
I thought Brock should have won before the match, but as the match went on, I thought it would be way cooler if Cena won, and he did, and I was happy.
Yeah, like, as a match, it was a perfectly done match for that sort of thing. I don't know. We've come a long way. My energy has been drained. It was a really good show.
We can talk more about current WWE at a later stage.
Yeah.
Guys,
anyway, but yeah, we should start doing really Road to Extreme Rules, because it's often better than WrestleMania.
That's not a bad idea. Although there's no real set theme I can use for, or music themes I can use for that. There's never really been any...
The ECW theme.
Yeah,
let
maybe.
The bodies hit the floor!
Almost want to end the show on that, but I can't, because I want to make one more plug for the benefit for Bob Cadmus, the creator of the awesome Random Goodness music videos.
Very good videos.
The URL, I've got a URL, is funsforfire.com. Funsforfire.com.
Fun. Fun with a D.
Fund, yes. Funds for Fire. I will put
number
a link
four
up.
Number four or the word four?
The word four. All one word. I will put a link.
Is Pain involved?
No. Amos, stop it. I will... Everyone hates Kane. Well, probably not Bob, actually, because he's the... He'll find a way to like everyone and everything in wrestling.
Sure. And as and you.
Yeah, that's something that I can definitely appreciate. A fellow positive wrestling viewer who also... Bob, you better watch out, because that might make you a target, too. You're fucked.
Uh-oh. So wait. Just stop. Wait. This is not for the actual S.A. Rios?
What?
No.
I thought this was for... I thought he was S.A. I was like, sir, I love your moonsault.
No.
We're deeply confused.
He's just... That's his favorite wrestler.
Huh.
S.A. Rios, he may have also lost his home in a fire. I don't know. And if anyone can tell us if that is in case true...
Matt Hardy.
We will have next week the S.A. Rios benefit show. So that will be... That one, and we can talk all about his series of matches. And hell, who better to have on than Bob himself, S.A. Rios 187? He would be the man to have on the S.A. Rios benefit show if we needed to talk about the career and legacy of S.A. Rios.
We could probably get S.A. Rios on the show.
I probably could. could. And yeah, Jesus Christ, that would make for a hell of a show. And maybe Lita would come on. And Matt Hardy would probably ring in and cry. So, I don't know.
Amy Dumas. She was good on the Colt Cabana show.
She was.
Just seemed like a nice lady.
Although the part where she said that she told people she would carve up their guts with a sword wasn't very pleasant.
She'd do what?
Yeah. So, guys, we're going to leave it there. Everyone, thanks for listening. We are, of course, here at WrestlingObserver.com, F4WOnline.com. And if you're listening to this for free, we appreciate you checking us out. But please... Think about checking out the site as a whole. Pay at $10.99 a month. You get all kinds of good stuff. The newsletters, the audio shows, the whole archives of the website, all the old audio shows, all the old newsletters going back to 2005 as far as all that. And also an archive of newsletters is constantly getting added to from the early 90s, which is just awesome.
Size of a small book.
Yeah, yeah. Dave was a lot more sassy back then, so...
A chip on his shoulder.
He did. So you get quite the fun burials of guys back in the early 90s. So I'd encourage
WrestlingObserver.com, now lengthy plug free.
Yeah. They took that out of the daily update. So that's
a shame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also message board Alan Forel's Pro Wrest Paradise, which you'll find
where we are currently
voting for the Pro Wrest Paradise Mega Hero, the second annual. Last year it was won by El Generico.
Is it parentheses and we don't mean Chris?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Gotcha. I thought it was a Benoit joke for a second. I was like,
Shut up, dude.
Yeah, so this is the second annual. Last year was really successful. It worked as a thing that we tried to do. It worked really well, surprisingly well, so I decided
to
bring it.
Who was last year's hero?
Last year's hero was El Generico, and this year...
Is he eligible for this year, or can you only be retired?
El Generico is one of the favorites, and we all... The goal is to see who the we can look back on it years from now and see who the flavor of the year was that year for my.
Is it like wrestler of the year, but for your fans?
No, it's not really like wrestler of the year because you're not looking at it like a body of work or a time period. Just who do you like the most right now? And we pair up guys against each other. It's a 32 man single elimination tournament, and we are that reminds.
Can I vote?
Yeah, you can vote.
I enter?
Actually, no, you actually can vote because the two first round matches that went up yesterday, the voting ended them probably about an hour ago, and I've yet to put up two new matches. So once I put up two new matches, you'll be able to vote on them. But currently, there are no votable matches up there, so I better get on that.
If there's one thing that our collective website specializes in, it is pointless, arbitrary, context-free polls.
Yes, it is. Well. Yes. And check out the Dean Ambrose versus Jimmy Susumu poll for a delightful picture of a person who used to host this show. That's it for this week, guys. Yeah, check out the website. Great value for money, if I do say so myself. And sign up, check it out, listen to all my old shows with Justin and Amo, because I've heard they're good from various people. So
some of our shows are more focused, others are less.
Yes. This is varied back and forth. And check out the Justin Shapiro show, which we have referenced. It is very good, even though it is not been plentiful so far.
An interim show.
Yeah.
And check
out Housen Is Now, where Amo will tell you all about Leeds United.
Yeah, and I may be eligible to win an award for Website of the Year.
No way!
I'm going to vote for you right now.
Oh, that's awesome, Amo. Congratulations.
I'm going to clear my cookies and vote again.
Feel free to plug that in my section. We will give you votes.
I have a little JPEG made up. I'll just post it. I'll be like, boom, do this. I may win.
Yeah. Please do. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back again in the next week or so with another show. And support Bob. If you have some spare change, give him. Please do. Quiet, Justin. I'm trying to get across one last plug.
I'm providing background music.
Please do throw some support the way of Bob. Be it if you have some spare funds, or if you can send him off some wrestling, because God knows he'll appreciate it more than pretty much anyone. Because he
love you, Bob.
Huge wrestling fan. And everyone else, thanks for listening. Check us out next time. Justin, Amo, thank you guys both. And bye, everybody.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Say it, Amo, floor.
What? Sorry, I wasn't listening. Can I